Liggins Institute Research Fellow Chris Pook is with us today, and it seems that researchers at Auckland University found more than 60 biologically active compounds in kawakawa. Aotearoa New Zealand scientists are proving the health effects of the plant revered as a taonga and long used in Māori medicine. Researchers from Waipapa Tamatarau, in partnership with Hapu-owned Wakatūan Corporation from Te Tauihi, worked to identify the active compounds in the endemic plant's leaves. And Chris is here to talk to us about what they found and what it means. A warm welcome to you, Chris. My name's Dale. Thanks for joining us on the program.
Morena. Thank you for having me.
Well, look, sometimes I think we are unaware of the super nutritional value of some of the things that are around us. I know that some who work in your field too, Chris, have broken down puha, for instance, and its super antioxidants, etc. But now we've long used kawakawa for its healing properties. We can confirm that scientifically now. Can you back us up and tell us where your interest in the kawakawa leaves in particular stemmed from, if I can use that term?
Yes. So I am a biochemist, and I'm employed at the Liggins Institute to work on a number of different projects exploring the health effects of medical interventions or dietary interventions. We were approached. We had an existing partnership with Wakatū, with one of our leading professors at the Institute, in kind of conversation with them, this project kind of developed into a concept which got funded by the High Value Nutrition National Science Challenge to develop a new food product, what was called a functional food product. So that is a food product with some properties, some effects in our bodies beyond mere nutritional value, a functional food. And they were working already in partnership with the beverage company, the Chia Sisters, to develop a product with kawakawa in. So we were brought in. We worked in partnership with them to show that to explore the biological effects of that. So this is the first piece of research that we're talking about today from that project, where we've directly assessed what's in the kawakawa leaf. So that we could have some understanding of what role it would play when it's combined with some other functional foods in the beverage that the Chia Sisters have formulated with Wakatū's kawakawa, which they've very generously shared with us. They've harvested from their lands down in Te Tauihi.
So there are many compounds made up within the kawakawa plant, or particularly in the leaf. The name kawakawa actually comes, well a lot of the origins of Ingoa Māori are debatable. But okay. There's one suggestion that it refers to kawa, or the bitter taste of the leaves. But there are many qualities, and our people have long revered the healing qualities of kawakawa.
Yeah.
What does that say to you about the sophisticated knowledge that some indigenous communities have about plants? I mean, you back it up with scientific proof. But many have long known just how beneficial these plants can be. What would you say of the combining of, I guess, in some ways, Western science and traditional knowledge?
Yes, that was really a strength of the project, I think, was that we would be working together with Wakatū, who have shared their Matauranga with us, so that we could look for properties of chemicals that we discovered in the kawakawa to try and align their knowledge with our Western scientific understanding of the properties of kawakawa. So we've done the best to cover as many of the most abundant compounds in kawakawa. There's something of a pragmatic decision in our analysis, where we have to kind of cherry pick the things which are most likely to be important. And that's a combination of two properties, their abundance and their efficacy. So we've picked things that are most abundant, or things which we could identify as something which was already well characterized with effective properties in the body. An example of that would be piperine, the molecule in black pepper, which gives it its hot, spicy taste. So we were able to identify that in Kawakawa, but it's not present at very high concentrations. It's actually present at relatively low parts per billion concentrations. But because it caught our attention, because we could actually assign an identity to it with some confidence, because it was well characterized, that is one of the things that we've included in our results. But there are thousands of features in the Kawakawa data which our instruments can quantify and obtain qualitative information about what they are. But our ability to actually confidently identify things is limited by two things. It's limited by the number of compounds in the libraries that we use to assign identities to things to match the features that we see in the data with what's already known, and also the availability of pure standards of compounds to be 100% confident that this thing is actually that thing. And that's kind of like a gold standard in science, to be able to put a name on something and to show that it absolutely is that particular molecule in that particular conformation. So we've done our best there, but we're actually quite limited, and there's probably a lot more to be discovered in Kawakawa. But what we found does actually give us some good idea of how and why Kawakawa is used in Rongoa Marui for the purposes that it is. So we found, for example, the neurotransmitter dopamine, which is really very abundant in Kawakawa. And this isn't a new discovery in the plant world. There's some other plants which we know contain large amounts of dopamine, like bananas, for example. And there's evidence to show that dopamine is present in plants because it exerts an antifeedant effect on herbivores to stop them feeding on the leaves of the plants. So the side effect of that is, of course, if you ingest some Kawakawa with a lot of dopamine in, it seems to have some effects upon your nervous system in your body as an endogenous neurotransmitter. So one of those effects is likely to be regulation of the speed with which your food moves through your gut motility and gut transit time. So when you ingest food, how quickly it goes through your body. And this has some interesting effects about how you use food. If you digest food more slowly, you get more nutrition out of it. Your body is amazing. If you're in a malnourished state, it always transmits food more slowly because it can do that. So typically, we don't actually extract the best resources from our food. And if you ingest something such as dopamine, it can actually improve that. Now, Kawakawa is part of the pepper family. And as you mentioned earlier, it's Kawakawa is endemic to New Zealand. So Māori have been making use of Kawakawa, as you say, as far back as your records go. But there are lots of other members of the pepper family around the world which are used in traditional medicine with very potent properties. One example is the use of black pepper in China as a treatment for epilepsy, which the Chinese have been using for 1,000 years or more. The records go back that far. And there's a very nice story attached to this to do with a compound that we found in Kawakawa called elepsamide. And this is a slightly modified version of piperine, the spicy compound in black pepper. It's got a slightly truncated backbone. And in the 1970s, the Chinese scientists took piperine, the original molecule, and made this truncated version of it in their lab synthetically with the intention of creating an improved treatment for epilepsy. And they now prescribe this to children as an anticonvulsant, children with epilepsy. So they created a molecule that they thought was synthetic at the time. And it now turns out that Mother Nature got there maybe millions of years before them by producing exactly the same molecule in Kawakawa. And it's actually one of the more abundant compounds being present at fractions of a percent by dry weight. Now, that's not a clinical dose of this particular compound. Our calculations show it's very unlikely to actually have a clinical effect, but it just goes to show that there are properties in the plant which may match up with, it's quite a potent plant. It has a very diverse chemistry, and there's a lot of interesting molecules in there which we think might align with certain properties in Rongoa Māori. Can I give you another example of that?
Well, I might have to leave it there because we've got the news coming up in a moment. What I am intrigued by and thankful for is the work that you've put into identifying something that I guess in a way has been handed down word of mouth through the generations. The healing properties of Rongoa are well known to tangata whenua, how it's used, steeping tea, etc. It's very common. And does it, well, just finally and briefly too, please, mate, because we've got the news, as I say, lingering. We're proud of its qualities and the way we've used it historically, but nervous that this might be tarhied or taken and then manipulated and profited from, which was never the intention of our forebears. So when we look at the way that the Manuka honey issue has played out legally, are there protections? Do there need to be protections from our people for this taonga and this treasure of yesteryear and today?
Yes, yes, absolutely, and that's entirely, you're right, as iwi, as your owners of your own traditional knowledge. One of the criteria, I guess, for entering into collaboration with Wakatu was that we would devolve all of the intellectual property that was generated from this project back to them, and that they would be kaitiaki of that. So we have an IP agreement which has put that in place, which will formalise that role. Our grant application made it clear that we recognise that right of iwi to benefit from their own knowledge and to own it, and that we would not be seeking any right to profit from this, to exploit it for ourselves in some product development capacity. So that's been quite a significant component of the work, and I understand that's in alignment with a United Nations directive on the rights of people to benefit from their traditional knowledge. So that's, I think, enshrined in international law now, but that was some of the text of that agreement was quoted in our grant application, if I recall correctly. So yes, that was a very significant aspect of the project, which I'm very happy to work within that agreement, with that understanding. I'm not here to commercialise the kawakawa. I have no desire to take what are my findings from this and build on it without working together with iwi, with Wakatu. I'm very privileged to be working in partnership with them, and I'm very grateful that they've chosen to partner with us and honoured us by sharing their taonga with us and let us use it in the clinical trials that we do. So I'm very grateful to them, and I think this is a model for future collaborations between iwi and Western science entities such as Waipapa Te Matauranga.
Good talking with you, Chris. Thanks very much for sharing some kōrero. I better go and have a cup of kawakawa tea, man. all the best to you, Chris. Have a great year.
You too.
Thank you. Dr. Chris Pook with us.